back with another edition of The Exchange. Today is Monday, April 27th. I'm joined with Blake Doyle virtually once again. How are you today, Blake?
I'm great. Yeah, another good day. Cold today, but great weekend, so all's well.
You're a little bit of a weatherman too, I guess?
We got to adapt to anything. Grass cutting, whatever it takes. Yeah, we are transforming the organization into.
Whatever you can to pivot. So it's been probably 4 days since our last one or so, I guess Thursday. Nothing really too extravagant happened, but one thing that did happen is both Saskatchewan and New Brunswick kind of announced their kind of tiered plan as to what they're going to do in terms of opening up the reopening the economy. So I don't know if you really touched on that much or had any chance to research that.
Yeah, and Georgia, of course, is fully operational. Maybe against the advice of some. And Sweden never closed down. But if you look at New Brunswick, the premier had an interesting comment that that will be the same when things open up here, and we're probably not too far behind in that trajectory. He's concerned about the disincentive for people to reengage in the labor market and what that means for companies that are trying to reopen when perhaps their employee base doesn't want to or isn't ready to go back or don't feel safe, whatever the reason is. So I think that's a concern. It's going to be a concern here, and I do think that things are on a path to slowly restarting. Problem is, not everything will restart, and even at this point, some businesses just won't return.
Yeah, and I watched on, it might have been the National or something, there was a labor relations lawyer just talking about how employers can incentivize people that are basically making more now through CERB than they ever were. Obviously, there's different tax implications, but they're essentially at the gross amount, they're making more than they were working their minimum wage to maybe even a little more than minimum wage. And they were kind of discussing how would you incentivize it? And the only way is to pay people more or to provide a value in what they're doing in their job, whatever industry that may be. But that's going to be the biggest difficulty is, like you said, re-engaging because it's not that it's free money because it's giving it to everybody. It's a fairly distributed, but it on the cusp, it is free money that they can sit at home and watch Netflix and still get the same amount they would be working 8 hours a day.
Especially as the weather breaks and, you know, gets more comfortable to be enjoying the solitude. You know, I think the policy was probably, it was swift and that's important. I have said this a few times, the stimulation is at the wrong end of the economic quadrant. I mean, we're not stimulating demand, we're stimulating individuals, which is fine to a point, but turning that spigot off or redirecting it now is going to be very, very difficult, especially as provinces are starting to reopen. They have to. We're into our summer tourism season here, agriculture, fisheries, tourism. If we can't find people, we'll stall. And will people even come? I mean, you noticed some comments recently about the potential for reopening the tourism industry and how people locally are reacting to that. So there's a lot of dimensions to restarting an economy. And it's only been closed, 6 weeks now?
Yeah, and like fully closed for, let's say, 4.5, because the first little bit, it was kind of a gray area of what to do and what not to do. But yeah, now it's been fully closed for well over a month, and we're going on our 6 week now. The comments I saw just on, it kind of pissed me off in a sense, but comments around, I can't wait for a tourist-free summer. And my initial thought was like, okay, yeah, that's great. But a lot of people don't realize the economic spinoff from the tourist, like a busy tourism. And that's what we're able to fund our social programs, our education, everything that the government funds. It's a lot of it's through the backbone of our economy, which is small business, and many of those are through tourism. So if a lot of these aren't able to open this summer and maybe never open again, that's a lot of different jobs for people, different economic spinoffs, whether that be, let's say, a tourist comes from, I don't know, the States somewhere. Stops at the bridge, stops in Borden, picks up some stuff there, goes to their cottage, goes to Sandspit, goes to Richards in Covehead. All these different spin-offs, people don't really see the tax implications and like how it'll benefit our entire society as a whole. And that kind of frustrated me because people, yeah, it's great that we don't have as many tourists, but the economic disaster that will occur if we don't have these tourists is far greater than having the beach to yourself one day.
And, you know, I've talked to retailers and restaurateurs that really are questioning if there's any value to reopen and will traffic return and how does a social distancing restaurant operate and does it make sense to even attempt that at this stage? where the, you know, people have been bleeding money now for a number of weeks. Even the finance minister this week acknowledged that there's going to be a deficit. The first time in a number of years, actually, we've been in a pretty good trajectory, and that's unavoidable. The question is, what's the magnitude? And I don't think that's even contemplated yet. The deficit numbers, you know, the per capita debt provincially, federally is going to be shocking, just shocking.
Crippling. That's why I'm saying once we can have the kind of tourist influx, we need that to happen, because that'll help pay off a lot of this debt. But people that want to have a summer for their own, I guess that's, they don't care about that. Another argument that all this has caused is kind of like the argument towards universal basic income. And I've always kind of been against it due to the fact that what's happening now, like people are getting too comfortable. Sure, there's some people who actually need the kind of this benefit, but there's a lot of people who just want to be able to, I don't know, stay at home and not to say anything bad about them. But there's pros and cons. There's a lot more pros than cons to an active workforce. And this, even Trudeau said the other day that this is in no way a test for universal basic income. There's still research to be done, but there has been lots and lots of research. I just can't see a way to pull the trigger on that for the long term.
I think it is a social experiment, like it or not. That's what we have. We've experimented with it. It's been adopted. It's almost an entitlement. I don't know how you turn that off. Big question is, how do you afford it? But the underlying element of this is, how does this fundamentally transform capitalism, maybe even democracy? And you see people like Leon Cooperman talking about the fact that capitalism is going to be forever changed as a consequence of this. You know, government have given a lot of money to businesses, and with people taking that money, you can expect some governance and some oversight, and that's appropriate. So you take the money in one hand, but be prepared to be a little bit more pressure maybe from government. So, you know, the fundamental underpinnings of capitalism, I think, are going to be challenged. I'm not sure what we're going to look like in 5 years. It won't be like what we looked like 5 months ago.
No, not at all. And I think my biggest argument against the kind of social experiment, the universal basic income in general, is it would make more sense to, like, in my opinion, to pay the employers more to top up wages than to give people a set number every month to stay at home. Like, if people work a certain amount of hours and they get a certain amount more money, I don't know what that fine line would be, but if government could fund that instead of funding an entire paycheck, it just makes a lot more sense, in my opinion.
Agreed. Now, you had some thoughts and comments, actually published an article about how governments manage crisis, and anything you want to sort of observe from
I got some good feedback on it. I guess some people disagreed with my statement that Trump will get reelected, but we'll see in November. The biggest thing that...
He might be killing off his base. There may be nobody left.
Yeah, there might be. If George is open, yeah, you're right. The biggest thing is that governments, yes, it's a dangerous time. Yes, it's scary. But governments who want maybe a political future should take advantage of it while they can, because there is a lot of positive sides politically to it. And also opportunity that things they might never... governments might have never explored. So offering free money to... Not free money. It's obviously it's investment. But free money to different sectors, different industries that can help them kind of pivot and adapt. And we're seeing it, a lot of different businesses shifting completely to e-commerce, or just hiring someone to help them make the pivot. And that's what we're seeing now. Like, a lot of different breweries, we often talk about breweries because I guess it's kind of like the buzzword through our economy, but different, like, they're delivering beer straight to your door. And you're going from free deliveries to eventually it'll be e-commerce that UPS or Amazon or whoever will, not Amazon, but a similar service will drop it off right to your door and you can have a six pack like that. So I think that's, a lot of places are pivoting towards e-commerce, and that'll be the new norm going forward into our economy.
Touchless delivery. So we might get beer dropped by drones. Nobody has to touch it, pre-order and pay, and it just gets dumped on your doorstep.
It's all an experiment through this, because it's never happened before. And I hate using the word unprecedented times because it's been so overused, but it's true. It's kind of survival of the innovator through it. It's not survival of the fittest. It's survival of the innovator. Who's willing to change their approach? Who's willing to try new things to create a sustainable business practice?
So those that were well positioned before this are accelerating. You look at the stocks, even the stock prices of Amazon and Costco and Walmart. They're accelerating because they had the infrastructure to adapt. The issue is the local guys, they're further crippled. The same thing happened when Walmart came to town and crippled them. Now this is a whole other existential threat, which is you know, electronic management, ordering, delivery in hours when the local guys aren't even open to try to serve that space. So, you know, we've got retailers, if you take clothing industry, that never cleared their winter inventory. When they come back and look at the shelves, still probably coats and hats on the shelves. Mm-hmm. Their summer stuff's probably there in boxes. They'll probably miss the entire summer season, which they should be selling through right now. So, you know, I don't know how people get through this crippling impact. It's not going to be possible for many businesses. Yeah. Some won't want to.
And it's a correction, like it's a forced correction. Obviously, we don't want to see businesses like kind of plummet, but the ones that aren't ready are too stuck in their ways, the old-fashioned kind of way of doing business, it's not going to work. I was going to ask, would True Valley Hardware be open during all this if it were still open?
Of course, yeah. So it's essential service. It might be just me peddling electric tape and paint. But, and those businesses, you know, there's a few local examples. Even Canadian Tire's got curbside pickup, which they never had before. So companies have adapted. When you drive by the parking lots, clearly people still want to go in. The grocery stores, the hardware stores, they're busy. Too busy, I believe. But, you know, there are other options. But these are bigger corporations that have the infrastructure to invest to support that. I was by Buns and Kings in the weekend where you can place an order, pick it up the next day. So the local guys are adapting, but they've got an uphill challenge.
And like you said, they didn't really think about what could happen like this, but whereas Amazon and the big players have been prepared for months and months, but it just took something like this to speed up the process that they've been believing in for the past number of years.
Yeah, it's going to crush many companies, which is unjustified. Anyway, we talked about that a bit in some articles as far as providing the infrastructure for local companies to better compete, you know, a centralized portal distribution process using local courier services. So the infrastructure is available. It's just not being reined and coordinated and managed.
I agree. And we haven't even touched on our interview today with, it would have been a couple months ago now that we actually interviewed him, but due to everything that's been going on, we haven't really found the right time to slot him in. But he is someone who is kind of being definitely affected by whatever's happening on, as Dan Kucher of South Central Kitchen in Summerside. So you're pretty close, Dan, in terms of business and friendship. Side,
yeah, we have an office in Summerside for many years, and there's not too many times I'd be in Summerside I wouldn't stop for a sandwich. So yeah, really strengthened that rapport. He's a former president of the Summerside Chamber, which I'm involved. But just a great guy. And as we go through this conversation, we did record it a long time ago. It hit with the pandemic, and we've been pending. We have a few people record it that we just haven't gotten released yet. This is one of those ones. But a great advocate for Summerside. Pretty innovative too. I mean, he's an early adopter of a lot of things, not least of which is electrification of vehicles. So he's got a lot of neat things to say, and somebody that I think we should all be watching into the future. Restaurant too.
From my perspective, he was fairly political active too, and he worked as a staffer in past governments in Parliament Hill. So kind of did go from doing that for so long and kind of being committed to that to going to law. He became a lawyer and then said, no, enough of that. And now he's an entrepreneur. So yeah, he definitely has a lot of cool perspectives on. This was when everything was going well and the economy was booming, so quote unquote, but he's been kind of adamant on social media about taking the right procedures to flatten the curve and just kind of making sure that the economy does stay shut. So if people do follow him on Facebook or Twitter or whatever the case may be, you will see that Dan is very pro shutting down keeping the economy closed until people are healthy.
It should, you know, lots change in the, I don't know, it must be 2 months since we chatted first. It'd be good to get a follow-up quick snippet as well. Yeah, because you know, sure, maintaining the curve is good, but we have done that, and as soon as you release people to the wild, the curve is going to spike again. Other communities have accepted that. I think what you'll see here is a relaxation. The curve will go up, they'll close down, and I think we're going to go through a couple of these cycles of relaxation, closure. And it's going to be difficult on businesses, but it's the only way to maintain the health system. So I think that's what we're looking at the next 24 months.
Definitely. Well, we'll turn it over to our interview with Dan now. You don't have to look at our faces anymore. and we will be talk to you later.
Exchange. I'm here with Sam McPhail. We've got a special guest representing Summerside today, Dan Kucher. And Dan, you're last name doesn't sound like a name from the Summerside community. You from this area?
No, not originally, Blake and Sam. Thanks for having me here, too.
Right into the hard punch.
Yeah, there's no gentle. Don't want to segue. It's
easy. Like, no, your name. You caught me at your name. Later.
No, Blake. Very observant of you. Kucher's not, not an island boat. Name.
Okay.
No, it's not.
To, any relation to Ashton Kucher?
Not that I speak about.
No, okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't want people asking me.
Have you met Demi Moore?
No.
None of that.
No, I guess Kucher would have been, it's a Ukrainian name, so my family came over on my father's side, post-World War II, as the Sipowiczs and Kuchers.
Okay.
Those are the two names. So my mom's family was Empire loyalists, so.
Okay. It's a good combination.
There you go.
Yeah. Here we are on the East Coast.
Here we are on the East Coast. Yeah.
So what would bring you to the East Coast of Canada? Not, this is a great place to be, but if you're from a bigger center, what would...
Sure. Well, like I moved to Nova Scotia with my family when I was 16 or 17, somewhere in there. So I spent some time in Nova Scotia, at least in the East Coast. Did my undergraduate degree at Acadia, again Nova Scotia. Back to Ontario for 7 years. Back to Nova Scotia for Dow Law, Newfoundland. After that, chased my wife there, and then
followed her.
Here we are. I followed her here to PEI. Well, we came together. It was a mutual. PEI was a mutual decision. It was a good one. Yeah, it wasn't on the, to be honest, it wasn't like the top of my list, Lee Summerside. When I moved to St. John's with April, I told her this is the smallest place I'll ever live. Just a little, to set the boundaries.
Yeah.
And I lost. And so when she completed her residency, she was looking for work opportunities. We wanted to stay close. Her family's in Nova Scotia. My family's mostly in Nova Scotia there in Ontario. We wanted to stay in the East Coast, and Summerside was hiring a pediatrician. And so I said no.
You lost it.
Yeah. I said no, and I've never heard of it. I probably had. I've probably been here to when I was a kid. We come to the island and stuff for the summer. So then Healthy enticed us with a trip to Summerside in August, leaving Newfoundland, which is fine.
Yeah. Get me out of here.
Love Newfoundland, love St. John's. If everything worked out, we'd probably still be there. And if, like, if April's work had still worked out there. And we showed up, and that was it. We had decided that by the end of the weekend, I'd flipped. I was pro Summerside.
Easy sell.
3 days I came in. Found the baker and the butcher shop and a great coffee shop, and we found the house that we lived in, and she'd go to the hospital, take her 3 minutes to get to work, and I'd take the kids to the beach, and I thought, okay, this is good.
This good, I could do this.
So we did. So we moved to Somerset. That was it.
So you mentioned you did law school. Now I know you as a baker because you've got probably some of the best food that I've had. Really
this side of Water Street, for
this
sure.
This side of Water Street, no question. But it's great restaurant.
We're
South
on
Central.
The wrong side of Water
so for
Street.
Yeah, right for those who don't know, I guess Dan is the owner of South Central. Is it on Central Street? I guess that would make
it
sense.
Is on Central Street.
The south part of Central Street. And probably some of the best sandwiches and breads you'd ever eat.
For sure, the best sourdough. So I want to know how you went from a law firm to an entrepreneur, but a restaurateur.
It'll be third career. My first career was in politics, 7 years of that.
I understand why you left that.
I was done. I was tired of winning.
Okay, it does get boring.
But I got moved to Atlanta, Canada, and I got back to losing again. So I practiced law for 6 years. I practiced primarily in the food and beverage sector on the commercial side.
Yeah.
Very different practice in St. John's and Newfoundland, where I started my practice, much more institutional, large clients, and then moved here to Summerside, and it's just a smaller retail law practice. Both were rewarding in different ways, but at the end of the day, for me, practicing law, it just didn't turn out to be exactly where I wanted to go, and I had an opportunity popped up. So a friend of mine, I always wanted to get into business at some point, so it was more a question of what and when.
What time,
And when I sort of generate the confidence to be able to do that, to be honest. I probably should have done it when I was 21 and just skipped, never gone to school and just opened a business and got started, but it took me another 20 years to get around to it.
Discipline to have the law background.
It's not bad, it's not bad. No, it's not a bad thing. I suppose you carry with you. Yeah, when we, you know, we do a purchase and sale, we go to rent a purchase and sale a machine or something. And I read the agreement. Everyone's always shocked. Like, oh, no one reads that. Like, well, I do.
That's what I did for 6 years, yeah.
So I'd rather read them and, you know, implement them in my own business than write them, which is just horrible to do. It's so boring.
Anyway. A certain kind of person.
Yeah,
that's
true. Yeah,
versus if you have your kind of mind is probably of the entrepreneurial sense, especially if you were working in politics, you kind of, you're always going, so you need that. You can't sit in an office for 8 hours and say, oh, well, I did my work today, now it's time to go home.
Like, yeah, like you like the strategy and the intellectual debate, but the, and it, you know, it is a good exercise to sit down and to do something, pen to paper, but pen to paper for hours and hours working out, you know, language and terms and conditions. For me, it just didn't work out. So, but the, what happened, a friend of mine from high school was a chef. He quit his job. He had a bunch of money, he'd saved up, he decided to quit his job and moved to Italy to go learn Italian. And
he's a partner now today.
He is now a partner, yeah. So anyway, he was in Italy, we keep in touch, and so he'd send me emails periodically, and one day he sent me an email and said, oh, I'm in wherever he was, at some Italian school. And he's like, oh, there's an earthquake, it's great, what a party. My Argentinian friends and I were cooking steaks on the street, everybody's outside, this is hilarious, what a great time we're having. And then 3 hours later, he sent me another email that said there were more earthquakes, the school started to fall down, we've all been evacuated, all I have is my hoodie and this hard hat, and I don't have a passport. Can you call our friend in Rome? Because I'm going to have to, I don't know what to do. So I took the opportunity to suggest that this, where he was living was gone, and no one was killed, fortunately, in that earthquake, but... yeah, and so I said, when you come to PEI, I'm open a restaurant. And he went to culinary school here.
Okay.
And so we did. He showed up. He was like, all right, let's take a look. And we looked at what we were going
to
do.
So you've repatriated a few people to Summerside region. I understand you've got some family members here.
Mm-hmm.
You say you brought partners to the restaurant.
Yeah.
So you're an advocate for the city. And I've seen in the course of the last few years some explosive things happening. Great infrastructure investment from the Cup right through to some of the facilities as far as even accommodations.
Mm.
What do you see happening in Summerside? You've been here now for a few years, so describe how you've seen the culture and the community and the economy kind of transform and what you see kind of happening in the future.
Yeah, so I'll start back a little bit from when I first got here. So I grew up as a kid, we moved around a lot. We ended up in a whole bunch of different places all over the world. So I had a lot of experience showing up in places and having a new set of eyes on it. So I've always been interested in that and trying to maintain that. Because, you know, you stay somewhere for a period of time and it's hard to see something new. And I think it's important. So when we first came to Summerside, what I saw was opportunity. That's how I viewed this community. Just from my initial view of it, I thought, okay, there's some assets here. Some of the assets I think are a little disjointed. I don't, you know, there's Summerside's got some really great things going for it, and it's got some few things that it could do better long term. So I was encouraged by that, and that was one of the reasons why we ended up making the move, because I thought, okay, this is the kind of place where we can do some things.
You can almost build some up on your own because there is that small market feeling.
Yeah, and there's a way to do that and then still be able to maintain a good family balance. And we've got young kids and, you know, two doors away from a daycare and the schools are great. So, like, all those things sort of came, coalesced. And so what I've sort of seen since we got here as well is I don't know if it's been meteoric, I don't know.
That's not.
Yeah, once you get over seven letters, my pronunciation
slurry your words.
Yeah, it's not in slurring. I just don't know how to pronounce the word. I can see it in my mind. Almost. Yeah, too many. Is that you know? There's been a lot of growth in the small business sector here. There's two anchors in Summerside, and that's a good thing and a bad thing. Is you got to be careful. It's Standard Aero, formerly Vector, and the tax center. And those are two anchors that provide good paying
year-round jobs
that are sustainable and help people develop skills in both ways. One's bureaucratic, one's really technical, but they're both really important in this community. And so, like I said, there's some positive. The positives are obvious.
Mm-hmm.
You've probably got 1,000 people employed in just those two locations. And then you always have the heightened concern, because if anything were to happen with either one of those, especially with the aerospace sector, it can move around. Now, I know they're very well anchored here, which is great. So it's always something to be careful of and cognizant of. And I think Summerside, although I wasn't here, is aware of that and pays attention to that, just given the change that happened in 20, whatever it would be now, years ago with their base.
But they've diversified a bit. So there's a few other companies within that sector.
There are.
So that's good.
Yeah, they spin off. Exactly. Yeah, you have some more support.
And has that been the fuel for some of the small business growth?
I'm not sure it's one or the other. In my opinion, at least, in terms of small business growth, what I think people have seen is the same thing I saw 6 years ago, was that there's an opportunity here. You still have, you have a set number of people that live here, and you have a city that has a number of businesses and operations and services that have been around for a long time. But you also have some that just didn't exist before. And I think people are starting to fill those gaps. I think you start to see that more with, you know, some younger entrepreneurs opening up shop here. And Summerside at its core is really a small business place. And it's a place where people don't just do business with each other and transact. You give me some service and I'll give you some money, or vice versa. But the relationships really matter here. And so I think the people who have gotten into business here now, sort of in the last number of years, there have been a few more risk takers or chance getters or whatever you want to call it. And people have gone and done it. I don't know if it's one thing or the other. I think it's maybe just a bit of a sense of the opportunity. I think once people get an idea that there's an opportunity, yes, I can do this, someone does it. And there were a couple successful leaders, and a couple, they're successful, and then other people see it. So, you know, even in our sector, which is a restaurant and food services sector, I think when I moved here, I remember one of the first days I moved here, I went to Charlottetown because I did my political stuff. So I knew the premier at the time. We worked together years ago. And I went up and chatted with him. And he's like, I remember him saying, he's like, oh, there's nowhere to eat in summertime.
That's a complaint I've heard. Right away. Where else do you go?
Yeah, and that was, you know, that was the Charlottetown viewpoint, right, from the premier at the time. Then the premier's chief of staff and I went out after that, and he told me that in 2 years I'd live in Charlottetown. That would certainly be the case.
Yeah.
Anyway, we didn't. We never moved.
Beat the odds.
Yeah, we have to go there for basketball tournaments and stuff sometimes. But so eventually open the restaurant, right? But yeah, so I think that's just people sort of sensing the opportunity and going for it. And I think when you get a few people at the front end, like I said, in the restaurant business, you've got the Monas, the Samuels, and then, you know, Alex Clark with the Open Eats. People always said you can't do a high-end restaurant in Summerside, and I think they both show that it's really successful, and that he's moved on to the brewery. And I really think that those types of businesses help inspire others and create a little bit of confidence. And they create traffic, and they create traffic in the downtown. And once you create traffic, basic Jane Jacobs stuff, right? Once you create foot traffic and people coming and going, others will continue to follow that opportunity. So, yeah, I think it's been good. And I think, that some of the bigger projects, too, I think the past mayor and then the current mayor and council, at least, really put a lot of attention into economic development and started to rethink what economic development means and how you go about doing it. And I think there's been maybe not enough attention paid on developing small business here and leveraging some of the assets, but
it's probably the same most places.
Yeah.
In Charlottetown, you'd say the same thing, but
yeah, that's the big fish, small fish.
People always chase the big
fish. Yeah, they chase the big fish, and you know, some people think that that's a good idea and some don't, but I fall into the latter camp. But
it's probably 85%. I don't know what the stat is, but there's a lot. The majority of the businesses would be small business when you look at the impact to GDP.
And yeah, costs. And especially in sustained jobs, too, yeah. Right?
Like you said about the two main pillars, like with Standard and the tech center, like only one's a business, so that's such a big fish that the other one's kind of the multiplication factor for the small businesses of that big business is pretty big.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Standard, even Standard has got there are other arrows. You know, I don't know how long-term successful the sort of aerospace strategy was in PEI, but they're grounded. They've got good employees. They do a good job. I don't know how much I can disclose what I know about them, but they are really competitive. That facility is really good, and they've been really successful. And that's an important piece of the city.
So going forward, so I think from what I see from the outside, and Sam, you're from the Charlottetown area. Of course, I'm
Cornwall. That's not don't loop me in with you guys.
We want to be part of the Summerside.
For sure.
But I think the growth going forward, from what I've seen transform in the last few years, I'm pretty excited about what Summerside has to look forward to in the next 5 years. Are you seeing any big changes?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's hard when I serve the chamber president there for a couple of years, and so when you're there, you're watching out more, and then when you do that, and even as a lawyer, you're watching out that, but from a business standpoint, because you're looking for developing clients as a commercial lawyer, and then when you're running a business, you're much more head down. How are we going to make this work?
Right.
But yeah, I have seen that, and I've seen a real more of an entrepreneurial spirit in the community. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's like you said, it only takes one. If one can do it, the other person will say, well, I can do that. Like, why don't I take a plunge and do the same thing?
Yeah, and I think that where it's happening are kind of been more interesting, from my perspective at least, more interesting.
Industries type
of? Yeah, and then it's the
diversities.
Yeah, and you get different kinds of places, and again, you get places that you kind of want to go and shop and frequent, and I'm seeing that a lot, and I think they go sort of hand in hand, the bigger development and the bigger attraction and also that small business piece. Now, Summerside's interesting because really the top, I'll call it top side of the city, sort of north side of the city, is really, its market is a lot bigger than Summerside because it's the hub basically from Summerside West, right? That's the Walmart, that's where the car stores are, that's where the big superstores are, and
that's where you get your McFlurry.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of people in Cavendish in the summertime come to sort of pick up their stuff to take back
to go camping or whatever.
Yeah, to go camping and that kind of thing. And so that's a different dynamic in the city. You get a lot of in and out, but at the same time, that's helped sustain a lot of the rest of the businesses and help feed them. So
that's an interesting point. So you've started. Against conventional wisdom, you started a small business in the downtown core. The downtown has traditionally been kind of quiet compared to what's going on in the Granville area. All the traffic funnels from the west down into the north end of the city. How do you attract? Do you see the vibrancy rebirthing down in the?
I hope so, Blake. I hope so. I have seen it, and it's been slow. I have seen it since I've moved here. For us, when we opened, there was never any question. And, you know, maybe I sort of take my my community hat and wear it too much from a business perspective. From a business perspective, it might have been smarter to not be downtown. But for me, I really think that going back to that initial, when you go somewhere new, how do you look at something new for the first time over and over and over again? And for me, Summerside, the downtown was missing. When I got here, and that was part of the opportunity, but really I try and measure sort of the health and vibrancy of a community based on the health and vibrancy of the downtown, and downtowns have transitioned over the past 30 or 40 years from places where you go shop for stuff that you need to places that you go shop for stuff that you want. I see them as more service and entertainment hubs than. If you need to go buy your groceries, you know, for the most part, you're just going to go to your big grocery store. But for the specialty stuff, you'll go downtown. Or if you want to go get someone a birthday gift that's kind of interesting or unique, you go to the downtown. You go get a coffee, and then you go stop in the shop, and you go get a haircut. And you go, it's an experience, so experiential. I think we've got a wonderful downtown here. So I've seen that growth happen, and I've seen a lot of the growth, especially those new businesses that I'm talking about from the small business perspective, setting up downtown, which is great. It's not enough yet, but that's where it's going.
There's a strong nucleus.
There is,
so,
yeah.
And we're in the Holman building right now. There's a great farmer's market here on the weekends.
Yep.
You mentioned Alex and the stuff that he's done. You've got a brewery. Sean, with his barber shop, is pretty unique entrepreneur.
Yeah, I started to sort of connect some of the dots.
Yep.
In Summerside downtown, and you know, you have even in the summertime with the whatever it is, the inflatable water playground down there.
Off the walls.
Yeah, the off the wall stuff. Yeah, it's really good, and they're starting to sort of, like I said, sort of connect some of those dots or fill some of those gaps. But really what you need to have is you need to have successive places that you want to visit or pass by or window shop.
Spend some time.
And, you know, yeah, we're in the Holman building, and for years this Holman building, for me at least, has been a bit of a source of frustration because you've got, if you count it, 96 steps or something.
Right on
Water Street, yeah. With frosted windows in the backs of people working in the Department of Education with the second floor that's half empty. So for me, that's always been a big issue. I've advocated that for a long time that should be turned into retail and commercial space. Because you create, again, it's Jane Jacobs 101, don't create dead space in your downtown. Because if you have dead space, people aren't going to walk through it. People then don't feel safe to go through it. There's nothing to go to, and you cut it off. So I still think there's a lot of opportunity here too as well, because I sort of look around, I'm like, okay, there's still growth. Even Alex and the brewery, which has been fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, that part of that is Alex, but part of that too was the Summerside Rotary Club.
Right.
Who decided to move that building,
right,
to the whatever that government building was before, and they built a fantastic library with some really great leadership in the community.
Yep.
And then the sort of the other pieces followed from that. Then the city made sure, you know, sold that building to Alex, and Alex built a brewery there, and so we started to fill in these gaps, and then we get two really great things, and we go from one older library to two really vibrant pieces of the community that you can walk between. So yeah, I think this is really good.
Giant residences behind them now. The Arsenal brothers are putting some massive units.
The Port,
yeah, which is nice, more residential.
Yeah.
You know, and you have a lot of, I saw this in practice a lot, there's a transition, there's a lot of people leaving homes and moving into rental, into apartments.
Smaller,
easier cost to manage, more consistent cost to manage for boomers or retiring boomers, that kind of
thing. So we'll put Blake in there before his nursing home.
Right. Sure, yeah, he's
not too far away. Right. I can walk to the restaurants.
There you go,
right.
Yeah.
So let's see, you guys are both, I'm an observer of politics, you guys are both, what would I say, active, at one point in your careers you've been actively engaged in politics, and I guess I was at one point. What do you think politically, what can be done, what needs to be done? Is there any political energies that need to be applied to this community, or is it independent, doesn't really need to be bothered with the interferences of government?
A buzzword that they use a lot is collaboration, but I don't know if they actually practice it. They might not practice as much as they want to, but I think it takes both sides, like government has, from the policy side, but then also, like you said, the leadership to actually implement it, whether that's the Rotary Club or the Chamber of Commerce or whatever the case may be. But I think, like, in terms of actual things, that you have to grow the population if you want to grow the economy. So I think by allowing more, whether it's immigration or finding better ways to get people to Summerside so that you can grow that population, that will in turn and grow the economy. And buy more sandwiches at your shop, or go to the brewery, or go get their haircut, or do whatever. They kind of influx the downtown core to drive the economy.
It's municipal, it's provincial.
It's
the Economic Development Department, to their credit, have been punching a little bit above their weight, probably, and attracting some energy to the city. What do you think? From a chamber perspective, from a political perspective, what does the city need to kind of really be the next catalyst in, like that?
The immigrants.
Yeah. Population.
Yeah, and immigrants are risk takers.
Right.
Willing to put the money in and stay, or risk another couple of years to
kind of
make it work.
Yeah, and, you know, really, like, you know, if I can sort of park the economic immigrant class aside, which is one that's coming. One function, but that's already answering that question. I'm going to come and start a business. But other immigrants are here. Like, if you just think about it if somebody's decided to uproot their family from somewhere else in the world and take that risk, especially when they have kids or when they're
financially,
spouses or financially spending everything they have to take a chance to do something better, really not for themselves but for their children. That's how our family, my grandmother showed up with her family from Ukraine. They got off the train.
They had to make a go of it. There's no.
There wasn't even. They came through Pier 21. They came on the ship. They got on the train, took the train from Halifax to Toronto, thinking the entire time, where the hell is all this farmland that everybody's talking about? They're Ukrainian farmers. So, like, where's the farm?
It's
New Brunswick and Quebec. Like,
right.
I don't know if we can swear on this podcast. Yeah, there's fucking trees everywhere. Yeah. There's no farmers. They end up in downtown Toronto. The train stops. Everyone gets off the train, and the train leaves. That was the system. Yeah. And so the church
was the PNP of the time.
Yeah, and they had young kids, and so no one wanted. So the church came and tried to organize it, and they were like last in line in terms of place to go. So that's, and you know, they, for whatever, at a different time, but at the same time, people who are willing to take those risks or go through that are going to take. Geez, starting a business, that's like.
Yeah. That's easy. I just left the country all across the world.
Exactly. And so that's really that sort of entrepreneurial spirit. I think there is a lot of value in the diversity. I think the diversity of ideas. You know, I always say something that totally contradicts what I always hear on politicians say is, oh, we want to keep all of our young people in PEI. And I always say, look, I've got young kids. I say, I don't want to keep young people in PEI. I want them to go.
And people do what they want. Crazy. At least have the choice to do it.
I want them to come back.
Right.
But I want them to go.
Experience.
Do something else and come back. And there's a lot of that sort of that carrying those ideas that sort of that can do a lot for a place.
Yep.
And so we made, you know, I always say it as well, like you can't, some things in life you don't choose. You don't choose who your parents are, you don't choose who you fall in love with, you don't choose if you pay taxes. But you know, if you're fortunate enough, you can choose where you live and where you raise your family and what kind of work you want to do. And that's where I think that's what you want to attract in PEI. So yeah, I forget your original question, politics and
drive the economy. That's how you do it.
It's interesting. So you mentioned economic migration, which has been a real benefit, I think, to the western part of the province the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Today, 88% of newcomers that come to PEI are actually labor class migrants. So it's a not well represented or recognized group. You know, in Summerside, I know there's people for student visas, so you've got the student population in schools is growing because of students. There's a lot of different functions of immigration, and I think Summerside's grasping that and benefiting from it.
I think so, yeah, absolutely, and I think PEI has in general as well.
Well,
they've seen the value of that. Yeah,
well, yeah, in terms of economic growth, it's all from immigration. If you compare the stats, it's literally like paralleled all the way through, and every report you read, it's, well, you need population growth if you want to even do anything with the economy.
And it's great, and it feels better. For me, it feels better because I'm more. It's sort of how I grew up in a really diverse community, and I've lived in places where I'm like the super minority, and I'm comfortable in that, and I think there's a lot of value in that, and I love people with different backgrounds and cultures. And
so
I think that's, yeah, I just love it. So that's what I think we need more than anything.
And is Summerside ready to embrace that?
I think so,
it's
yeah.
It's a loaded question, but you know, it's happening.
Yep.
And at first, it's a little bit uncomfortable for people. What I see is that they are embracing that. Seen that as well?
Yeah, I have the whole time. You're always going to have the outliers. But I think what's really unique about Summerside in particular is it's sort of on this threshold for size where you kind of know you know everybody.
Yep.
And you know everything about everybody, which means you know nothing about anybody.
Right.
And everyone thinks they know what's going on, and no one actually has any idea.
A lot of rumors.
What's going on. It's like this perfect separate degrees of separation. To make sure that nobody knows anything.
Right.
So yes, yeah, so there's a lot of rumors and stuff, which is always entertaining and fun. But what really makes it unique at the same time is that people are found in business, in particular here in Summerside, recognize the value of supporting the community. So it isn't just about me trying to make a bunch of money. In a business, if I'm making widgets, it's not just about selling a whole bunch of widgets. I've always been so impressed with the business community, in particular here in Summerside. I'm impressed with all communities, but the business community, I was always so impressed with their ability to give back and work together. And you know, you see that every year at the
Cowboy Boots.
Everywhere. Cowboy Boots is probably the biggest project there, but you see it all over the place. And people here in Summerside do business with one another where they might save a buck or two if they do business with someone else.
Right.
But they still do business with one another because they support one another. Right. And they know, geez, at the end of the day, probably, you know, my cousin's going to go work at that place. So I'd rather have them stay and have a good paying job and work together. And so I've always found that really unique. And I think Summerside is really in that size where if it was too much larger, it's easier to be anonymous. Yeah. And the detachment and you don't need it as much. But I think here people realize in Summerside that you really are better here when we work together, and I think we're a lot stronger when we work together. That doesn't negate any kind of competition. I think it's competition still out there and healthy. But I've always found that unique, and I noticed that right when I first moved here, and I've stuck with me ever since. So I think it's really impressive piece of this community, and I think it's one of the things that attracts new entrepreneurs. Right. I think that really helps people grow. Like, you know, when we even opened this place, people we were going to be in direct competition with were incredibly supportive.
Right. Yeah. And across the industry.
Yeah, exactly. That's the idea. Yeah, you just bring,
bring people down.
You bring people. Core. Yeah, exactly. You bring them down to go and view. Now you're not going to go to place A, you go to place B, and, two people can come down and go back and forth. Or,
yeah.
Yeah, there's a real recognition of the value in sort of some of that kind of economic hub, but in the value of working together.
But I think that's a good place to end with the most famous man on the southern end of Central Street, Dan Kutcher.
there's a lot of famous people on the south end of Central Street.
The best sandwich in the best food.
We try hard. We got a good staff.
We always enjoy coming up. In fact, it's worth the drive to Summerside just to stop at South Central.
Oh, thanks, guys.
We take food orders up actually. So.
We were supposed to get sourdough bread for one of the girls at the office, but you're close to it.
Yeah, we're only open 4 days a week. It's a life work balance.
There you go.
We're taking it to the extreme.
So, well, we thank you very much for agreeing to meet with us, and I'm sure you won't hear the end of us. We'll be back for some food.
Yeah, great. Yeah,
thanks for your perspective on Summerside. We'll be in touch again.
Thanks very much, guys. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Blake.
Thanks again to Dan Kutcher of South Central Kitchen. Some of the best food you'll ever eat in terms of sandwiches, breads, and other interesting things. We're very thankful for Dan for his time. This was, again, we mentioned it was a couple months ago that we actually got down and recorded with him. But due to kind of everything that's been going on, we decided it was probably best to hold off on his interview for a little bit until things kind of flattened out. We will likely begin to hear more this week on what PEI is doing to kind of loosen restrictions, as the Premier and Dr. Heather Morrison mentioned. May 1st will be kind of a new date, and maybe they'll be kind of clawing back a bit of what has been announced. So tune into The Exchange, and we'll just dissect that on future episodes. Again, thank you very much. I'm Sam McPhail on behalf of The Exchange, presented by Confederation Group. We'll see you next time.